Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Andrew from Alexander's, you are here. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming along. I mean, you've come a long way, actually. I mean, what was your drive this morning?
Horrendous.
Yeah.
What is wrong with the UK and these roads? Well, I mean, good God.
I don't think anyone knows how to drive on UK motorways.
Well, everyone just drifts now. Have you noticed?
Wanders across lanes, yeah, sits in the fast lane.
Yeah.
Miserable. Yeah. It was what, about 4.5 hours or 5 hours for you?
4.5 hours.
Really?
Actually, for a Monday morning, it wasn't too bad for a Monday morning, to be honest. Yeah.
Where have you come from?
North Yorkshire.
Right. Shall we reveal what you came down in?
You can.
A Lamborghini Urus.
Yes.
Hello.
He's coming a proper car.
He's coming a proper car.
Like
he's done all of us. You know what? I don't dislike them. I appreciate them for what they are. Because to me, what I discovered when I came up and drove that one with you a year or so ago, it is a Lamborghini. That's where they've done a brilliant job, right? Like, it's a bit, therefore, that's probably why I don't really like it, because I'm not a huge modern Lambo fan. But it is stayed true to what Lamborghinis are all about, in my opinion. It's brash, it's shouty, it's 100%. In your face. How often do you drive it flat out, and how often do you cruise in it?
Well, I've had 6 Uruses now. I was just telling you this morning, wasn't I, Tony?
Unbelievable.
And I bet I've done probably nearly more miles than most in across them all, because I use them virtually every day. Okay. And I would say, because when it's in Strada, it's like being in a Range Rover. It is that good that most of the time I am just tootling around. Okay. But put it into Corsa when you're in the mood, or it's a Sunday or whatever, or you've got my young son in the car, and it's special. A car is special.
It can achieve a lot. And I remember, Tony, you went on a Lamborghini sort of customer trip, didn't you, years ago, just when the Urus had come out, and none of us had really driven it, and you'd followed it in, I can't remember, were you
Perth,
in the Performante?
Yeah.
And I remember you coming back from that trip and saying, we were following this car, and it was flat, as in the body roll, was just flat through all of these corners at high speed, and you were impressed from outside the car.
Yeah, I was, And then we went in it as well, and we really understood. It's literally a supercar jacked up. It's definitely the best SUV you can buy. If you like to drive, it's definitely the best SUV you can buy. Previously, I would have said a Macan was, but the Urus, is definitely the best.
Well, I was doing a track day at Croft two years ago, and I was there in a GT3, and it rained, but I'd actually driven there in my Urus. So at lunchtime, I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And you know, normally when you put a normal car on track, it just goes flappy, and it just, no matter how good they say it is, they're rubbish, aren't they?
Yeah.
I put this car on track, and I'm not kidding you, it was amazing.
Yeah.
There was GT3s. I was overtaking them. AMG GTRs.
Could you imagine being in a GT3 and a Urus coming flying around you outside? You'd be fuming, wouldn't you?
In the fairness,
it was wet.
But I got to the defense of GT3s.
Well, I got back and there was one guy. Do you know Supercar Nigel? He gave me a standing ovation from the pits. The brakes were steaming. But that car, because of the rear wheel steering, I could get loads of oversteer coming out of corners. I mean, what four-wheel drives can you get massive oversteer coming down the pit straight? I mean, come on.
Well, maybe we're going to discuss that because we've been teasing it for a while, but today is our SUV special, an episode kind of dedicated to all things SUV. Mainly because, Andrew, I feel like you are Mr. SUV ever since
we... That's the first time I've been called that, but I'll take it.
Ever since we first met or every time we've chatted, you've always been, I think, flying the flag for the big punchy SUVs that Tony and I often are a little bit rude about on this podcast.
No, I like
them. You like them, but we often say, what's the point in them? Like the Carrera Turbo GT Cayenne XY4C.
You're a competitor, that is.
Yeah, but I mean, I think when that launched, we were both like, what? Yeah. Like, why?
Yeah.
So don't suddenly just, you know, because Andrew's here, you're trying to impress him and be like, oh, no, I like them.
I mean, I do like them. I tend to half agree that if you're gonna go and get an SVR, what's wrong with a normal sport? Because 9 times out of 10, it's the same. I mean, how fast can you go in this country? In general.
Well, I mean, but that applies to all cars, right? We can go down that conversation with GT4 versus GTS and, you know, let's not get fired up about that again. But anyway, we're going to be discussing it all. We're going to be going into the sort of, you know, the world of SUVs, discussing what we think are the best, what are the sort of most underrated, what are the forgotten, what are the worst, maybe the overrated. And it's all going to kind of kickstart. And it's as if we planned this perfectly, guys, with the launch of the new Range Rover. Ooh. I mean, the ultimate way to kickstart our SUV special with the launch of maybe the king of SUVs. If we're taking the breakdown of sports utility vehicle, Range Rover, I think they declared themselves as the original influencer, right? That's how they like launched that new car. We're back with the original influencer. When I went to the launch, I was quite shocked for them to say, it's only the fourth gen, or maybe the fifth generation. Have there been four?
Five.
So this is the fifth, right?
Yeah.
That's actually not that many iterations of such an iconic car.
But 10-year cycles, though, mate.
10-year cycles. Yeah. I think Rolls-Royce is probably the only other brand that limit their cycles that much, right?
Maserati be another one.
Well, for other reasons, I think. Not always through choice.
Lamborghini as well, with the Aventador, with the big V12 cars.
Yes, yeah. Okay, fine. But yeah. I think, you know, Range Rover being such a popular and iconic car and in a sort of uber competitive space, you know, when you've got things like Mercedes and BMW so that are being churning out new models every 2 or 3 years or new versions, I just would have, in my head, I thought there'd been more Range Rovers, but I guess the sport maybe was part of that. And
but it's why they make so many different variations of Land Rover, Range Rover now. I mean, when you look down the line, I mean, the list is endless, mate, from top to bottom, you know, starting with a Vogue, finishing at a Discovery Sport.
Yes, we had to rack our brains there, didn't we? Okay, so Mr. SUV, Andrew, what are your feelings about Range Rovers, big Range Rovers, not the sport? So big Range Rovers, have you been a fan? Are you a fan?
Wait a minute. Do you ask him that from a business point of view or from a personal point of view?
I think
both.
Because
he is a motor dealer.
Of course, but he's also a huge SUV fan, hence why he's here.
Yeah.
So feel free to add in some insight saying, I loved them, but they're awful to sell, which is what Tony seems to do weekly. But yeah, just as an individual, are you a Range Rover kind of guy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're the best at what they do, aren't they? I mean, it's as simple as that. I think with the product that they've got, if only they could get the quality right and them stop going wrong, I don't think, providing you can afford one, there'd ever be another car that you'd ever want.
I mean, how many times have I said that?
Mm-hmm. You know, they literally, I would have one. I mean, we went through a point because my wife's got a Discovery and I had SVRs at the time. I mean, literally, we would drive along and both of us would be stressed senseless because something was going wrong with our car at the time. But if it wasn't for that, for sure, I'd probably still be driving a Range Rover now.
It's amazing because of that 10-year cycle. You know, in that 10 years, I think the SUV sort of market has changed completely, or the scene at least, you know, because when that last iteration came out, yes, it was really the obvious, but almost the only choice to do everything. Super luxury, incredible off-road capabilities, sort of great on-road presence, you know, but sort of also classless, you know, all of these different things driven by royalty, but also Bob from the corner shop. And then, then that whole space became so much more competitive, and we've seen things like Cullinan, DBX, Urus, X5, blah, blah, X7, you know, all these different things. So Range Rover needed to do this, right? They needed to answer the competition, Tony, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, Range Rover don't compete with Cullinan.
Why not?
It's a different level of money, mate. I mean, Range Rover compete with an X7, GLS, Merc.
I think Range Rover competes with like anything at the top end. I think the only reason you don't have a Cullinan or something, because you can't go shooting. Well, people do, but if you tip up shooting or something in a Cullinan, you get laughed up.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, come
different
on,
different money, you know? Though, isn't it? I mean, a Cullinan's 300-odd grand. I mean, at that point, why isn't everyone in Rangers? Why do people even bother buying Cullinans and Bentaygas and?
But I think it does compete, though. I think it's one of the few cars that, even though it's in a different price point,
in terms of quality, it does compete. Maybe
it's only a badge snobbery thing, mate. Like, because you can't. Firstly, I would bet an SV Range Rover, the new top one, I bet that's going to get to 250, 260. If you tick everything, I bet that's going to be an expensive car.
Over 200, definitely.
Yeah, over 200 easily.
Oh, you'd need your head testing.
Yeah, you would, but it's possible for sure. So you're saving 100 grand on a Cullinan, but you're probably getting equivalents, and we'll dive into what this new Range Rover's got, but you're getting equivalent levels of tech and luxury and things like that in the newer Range Rover.
Probably more now.
Probably more. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And therefore, all you're not getting is the, oh, I've got a Cullinan, which actually can sometimes be a good thing.
But I think people with, there's certain people with real money that actually don't want the stereotype. Everybody's different, isn't it? So we can't stereotype. But I think the like real money out there, they want to tip up somewhere and actually not be known. So, you know, if you've got a country estate and you go into the local shops and you employ 50 people in the village because of your shooting and everything such as that, you want to turn up in a Green Ranger, or if you turn up in anything else, they'll be like, oh, there's that landowner that's a bit of a knob.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. We've said it many times. It's the gulf of the SUV world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's almost become a little bit understated now for that reason. Which is why I think it doesn't compete with the real big boys for that reason.
Okay, I see what you're saying in that sense. I would still put it in that top level range, because I think the ultimate top Range Rover is class leading as a SUV.
Well, it's a bargain then. I mean, everyone
agreed.
Everyone just go and buy a Range Rover then.
But we know that's not the world that we live in. You know, like we know that's not the world. There are plenty of bargains out there. Get an R8, don't get a Huracan. Like, you know, but that just doesn't happen, does it? Because people want the Lamborghini. So a few facts and stats about that new Range Rover, which really impressed me. Of course, as we know, electric and hybrid versions are sort of, you know, going to be the forefront in a few years' time.
But 2024.
Yeah, thank you.
Boring.
But boring.
How dare you? We love EVs on here.
But they've really focused on the sort of, yeah, the luxe and the lifestyle. So the thing that I picked up on more than anything is the in-cabin experience they seem to have focused on, and really in reducing noise. And speaking of Cullinan, this is something that Rolls-Royce always fly the flag on. Whenever I've done new Phantom or Cullinan, oh, we've put padding in the tyres to reduce the road noise and all these crazy things. Range Rover have got noise cancelling headrests.
Yeah,
I mean, so they're pumping out frequencies that reduce the sounds from outside the car. The air cabin air quality filter also helps reduce noise. The Wade depth sensors help with all of these things to make it this very peaceful and quiet, serene place.
Sounds expensive when it goes wrong.
Yeah, first thing I said is, I wonder what happens when one of those doesn't work.
Disaster.
But this has definitely been the focus for them, is to create this incredible environment. And I also think they've picked up on the fact that a lot of people now get chauffeur driven in Range Rovers. I feel like that's become a thing, especially with the long wheelbase. And you see them in and around London. So that's why I think that car will always operate that top level in that kind of space. You get a Range Rover Sport if you want something, you know, more usable, daily, etc.
And I think what perhaps Range Rover have done with the Vogue, essentially, I think they've really gone after that chauffeur market. Whereas, you know, if you wanted something to sit in the back in general, previously, you'd have a S-Class 7 Series or an A8. But I think people have changed now, because SUVs are 50% of the market now. I think people would rather be in a Range Rover as well, because as a percentage, that they lose a lot less money than them S-Classes and A8s, and they're just as cool, they're just as nice to drive and to be in. So I think Land Rover have purposely gone after that market as well.
And I don't think the long wheelbase is just for the chauffeur market. Having the reason that I'm Mr. SUV, as you say, is because I've got two young children.
Okay.
As a car enthusiast, now, in a normal short wheelbase Range Rover, with your two children when you've got the TV screens in the back, especially when they've got the reclining seats, which the
SUV. So you'd have a four-seater. So you'd have a four-seater.
No, well, you can have the reclining seats and the five-seater too.
Yeah.
It's an option. Is actually, it's not big enough.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, of course it's big enough for ultimate luxury. It's not. So I think even the man in the street, a long wheelbase is just the way to go.
Yeah, if you can get it. And that's the other thing. It's all about, you know, as in within reason, you know, a standard Range Rover is big. But if you can get it bigger and it creates more space and opens it up for you, why not? And you're saying there's other reasons rather than just being chauffeur driven in it. But I want to pick up on something Tony just said. You said SUV is 50% of the market currently. Mm. When did that happen for both of you? So when I was growing up, it was all about station wagons, right? Estates, you know, that was always the vibe. And still there's MPVs
and
yeah, stuff, yeah. That, you know, that, that there's, and there's still a sort of part of the market that desires that, you know, we're seeing M3 wagon coming now. But when did that switch happen where SUVs, especially in this country, seem to take an absolute rise? I'm asking both of you.
Well, shall I go?
You go, mate.
Yeah. Well, SUV, as in sports SUV, not just four-wheel drive, because otherwise you're a cash cow made the world of normality, if you like, from a normal saloon car. For me, it was the X5.
Okay.
In 2001, when they launched the X5, that was the first car on a monocoque chassis.
Oh, hello.
Not a ladder chassis. So it actually drove like a car. Okay. And for me, that was the first car that you could drive and enjoy and have a four-wheel drive. Because if you compared an X5 at the time to a ML Mercedes or a Range Rover of the time, they drove terribly.
Really?
Yeah, but that was the first car. And then everyone then followed suit. Okay. Range Rover Sport came out. They started building the other four-wheel drives on proper monocoque chassis, so like a normal car is made. And for me, that was when it all kicked off.
I bet it made it a bit more driver-focused. Tony, was this a similar thing from your side?
I would say that's when it kicked off. But I think when it really, really, really caught was about 2010, because in that 50% statistic is cash cars are included.
It's
the whole market. And if you go back, that's when everyone, I mean, look at Mercedes now. I mean, every single car basically is an SUV. I mean, they probably make 30 SUVs. I mean, it's unbelievable. They probably make more SUVs now than they do normal cars because there's a variant for everything. And they're all doing the same, BMW, Audi. I mean, I saw a Q4 the other day. Where's that come from?
Well, okay,
it's just another variant of another car.
But why why and when did this happen, right? And look,
2010. Yeah. I just told you.
No. After 2001.
Yeah. After 2001. Good point. Quite a wide variation there. But
that's where, if you like, the Q3s and Q4s, they came from the bigger SUVs.
Yeah.
But
yes.
Then they started making smaller versions of them, didn't
Compact
they?
Compact SUV.
Yeah, which is then where Macan, so when it's 50% of the market, it's because they build a lot more Macans than they do Cayennes, but that had to start somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you another thing as well. Sorry. I'll tell you another thing. If Porsche had bought the Macan out at the same time or before the Cayenne, they'd have never sold Cayenne. Because of, like you said, Macan, they sell more Macan than they do anything else. And then it probably is Cayenne. But I think a lot of people, when the Macan come out, they come out of their Cayenne into a Macan because it was that compact SUV.
That's the same though as Boxster to 911, in so much as actually a Cayman or a Boxster is probably better than a 911, but it's a 911, so yeah. You can't.
Yeah,
you
maybe.
Know, do you really, I think do, the do you really want to tip up in a Macan when there's a better model already out?
There's still a market for it, but what I'm saying is, I think if you had a choice from day dot, Macan, Cayenne, I would think more people would have gone into a Macan. You know, they bought a Cayenne because there wasn't a Macan. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's like Range Rover. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, yeah.
And Range Rover Sport. You know, that was my dad, who we know, or at least Tony and I have discussed, owned 55 Range Rover Sports.
And had 45 Nicks.
Yeah. Something like that. You know, for him, he never considered the Vogue because it was just too big and too much for him. He always wanted the smaller cars. So, Tony, I see where you're coming from with the Macan argument, but for as many my dads as there are in the Range Rover world, there are many out there buying the big ones and buying the big Cayennes too. But so we understand kind of when they became more attractive, but why do you think as individuals we've all decided that SUVs are theoretically what we want, right? And I am totally partly as part of this conversation and to blame, and we know Andrew is, because, you know, I'm driving around an X3. You seem to have 55 Euruses. So, he's had 8. Or how many did you say you had?
6.
6, sorry. I'm going to extrapolate that throughout the episode. He had 150 Euruses. That'll be the title of the episode, I think. But yeah, so why do you think nowadays the majority of people seem to want an SUV, not just the fact that SUVs became something that manufacturers were making. Where did that demand come from?
Well, I would say is the driving position, safety, driving position. You know, that the first time, if you think you jumped in a Range Rover, whatever large car that was up, you actually felt safer and better, didn't you? Looking down on other people and all that, kind of...
Tony's used to that.
So I think whole life I've done that. No, actually, when I was a bus driver, I didn't.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
When I started getting a few quid, I looked down.
Yeah, of course you did. So driving position, the feeling that you have behind the wheel.
Yeah, not just drivability, but it's just nicer to be up there, isn't it?
And that's the thing is, you know, the cars aren't always that more practical. They don't always have more space. You know, there's various different things, but from a... Yeah, usability.
Well, they have more cubic space, mate.
More cubic space, yeah. Big word.
I'm not as silly as I look, you know.
Well, but yeah, I think you're right. There's something about when you step into an SUV as a driver, it is a sort of nicer on the road experience, but you are foregoing usually dynamic capabilities. We'll come back to the big stuff soon. But yeah, you know, usually a wagon or something like that is going to be more... more dynamic on the road. So giving up some of that. And price-wise, have SUVs been more expensive traditionally, or is it usually they've priced them under?
So they are definitely more expensive and no more to make than a saloon car, which is the biggest thing for a manufacturer. And the other thing I'd add to what Andrew said, and he is bang on, is that
someone at the door. You two talk, I'll go and see who that
is. So the big thing that I'd add to that, what you said, is... they're four cars in one, mate.
They're not
a traditional saloon car does what it does, but an SUV in general now is like mine and Sam's favourite, well, one of our favourite all-round car, the M5. Four cars in one, and a sports utility vehicle does all of that.
But
now.
Yeah, an X5M, so an M5's four cars in one, but is an X5M five cars in one? Because
it's got a bit more
room.
You
can put the dog in it or whatever it might be.
And as well, I think people... search for, you know, they like the cubic space, which is why in modern SUVs now, I don't really see the point in it, but they end up putting two seats in the back and they become seven-seater.
Well, that's the big thing with the new Range Rover, it's got a seven-seater now. Yeah.
And they've ticked every box there.
Every box.
Long wheelbase, SV, seven-seater.
I think they did a fantastic job of sitting down and going, what does everyone need or want? Let's just do it all.
Did you hear that that 30,000 conversations they had with customers? I mean, obviously 29,000 actually complained about the previous one going wrong. But in terms of what they need, and I think they've nailed it. Have you seen the Alexa thing?
Oh, yeah. So, Alexa within the car.
Yeah.
And they were trying to display that in a little bit of a tacky way at the launch. But
it didn't work, did it?
Well, it was like sort of pre-done. It was like, oh,
let me... was very boring, that man, wasn't it? I don't think it was.
Bless him. But, you know, he was doing the whole thing. Throughout the presentation, he's going, Alexa, Alexa, Alexa. And he goes, and now let me speak to Alexa. I was like, if she was real, she would have responded a half an hour ago when you kept saying Alexa, Alexa. But bless them for trying. Okay, so we sort of think we've addressed... when there was this kind of upturn or why people are buying SUVs, at what point, well, I know the answer to this as well.
So what you're asking for?
Let's just, you know, elaborate. Because now we've gone from not only SUVs being desirable, we've now got these super hype SUVs, right? So you've got, you know, RS, Q8s, and well, we can say it again, Urus's, and I'm trying to think of other examples, X5Ms. Is there an X7M? No, there's not, is it?
No.
There will be.
But even Bentayga, you could put in there.
Bentayga sorry,
Speed.
Thank God, I don't know, I forgot about that. Range Rover Sport SVR. And so that, do we think, was primarily because people want to, you know, buy the best, buy the ultimate, why'd you make an M3E? Anyway, why not make an X3M? Or was it because they actually thought, you know, people wanted the cars to be more dynamic and more capable? Is it a badge thing, or is it actually creating a car that is better and usable to drive? Because I'm going to come out and say, I think even a super SUV is, I think it's pointless.
I think it's a market thing. It's just the market. The market demands it, mate. And the manufacturers, like what we've just said, it costs no more money to them to make an SUV, but they charge more money for them. So if you've got a C class, it costs Mercedes a amount of money to make. If you have a GLC, it costs them very similar money. They're loads more money new. So they'll just make what the market dictates, and the market dictates that you have a people want SUVs.
SUVs and RS badges or AMG versions.
Yeah, but I think if we have this conversation when you've got two young children, like I have, as a car man, but also as Carmen who wants to drive a nice car every day, that I suppose I'm the target audience, really.
They tick every box.
And I think if if I was single, would I drive a Urus every day? No, and I'd probably 911. No, that's a bit obvious, but I wouldn't drive a Urus every day. So okay. I think they've understood the market of someone that loves cars, that needs the space, that wants to be safe, wants to be up high, but wants the dynamic ability too. And they are so dynamic now that you can have, I think we were just talking before, you can have four or five cars in one, and that's what it gives you.
So I a little bit disagree with the fact that if you were a single man, you wouldn't have one. Maybe you wouldn't, but I would say Lamborghini, BMW, they do target that one person. Don't have to have kids, but, you know, I know someone that's got a Urus in his early 20s. He hasn't got kids. He's got mm-hmm. no plans to have one. He just wanted a Urus because that's...
I think the reason they're successful is because it appeals to everybody. Appeals but I totally to everyone. Agree. It's not just for one person. Is it? But I do agree with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's get into... good, bad, and ugly. No, good, something like that. Let's talk about the word of SUV.
Just made it up.
Yeah, I did. I'm a bit distracted today because I put an offer in a house this morning and I'm literally just waiting for my phone to ring.
You can tell I'm coming.
Yeah, so I'm just literally sitting there just staring down at my phone going, what are you guys talking about? I'm just waiting for some estate agent to call me. But what I wanted
to do...
Is
that who you thought was at the door?
Yeah, literally. I thought the estate agent, Sam, you've got it. I'm here to hug you. But it wasn't. It was somebody else. Anyway, so yeah, what I thought we'd do is address... Well, the current market, because there are so many SUVs out there, right? So many. And as a man with an X3 M40i who's constantly looking at maybe training
not
it.
Not for long.
Yeah.
We'll sort about what we're telling you.
Don't start on this.
We're going to ram him right. No.
Not quite.
What, have you got 60 days old?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Come on, hold on a second. But as someone who does browse every now and again at what the other options could be, there's so much out there which, you know, just hits every single mark. So... I want favourites and I want underrated. And I've already thought about this, so I'm putting you guys on the spot.
I already know underrated.
Okay, go on then. If you want to know underrated, launch straight in.
Favourite SUV? Oh, mate, it all depends what it... I mean...
No, for you, mate. For just go personal.
Oh, just for me?
Yeah, we'll come back to value. I know that's your favourite.
Urus.
Urus is your favourite. Okay, yeah, so yeah. All the money in the world, you go out tomorrow, you buy a Urus.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's because you know it holds its value well.
There's lots of things, as in, you know, it is just the best. It's like a supercar that you can use every day. You know, you can drive it at 25 mile an hour, or you can drive it flat out, and it performs. It's a but proper
as a kit. Mr. Porsche, why are you not picking that Cayenne GT thing?
Because you're going to have a shit.
Okay, so there we go. So it is the fact that the Urus will hold its money is what you like well, so much
well,
about
well,
it.
Well, no, it's not just that. It's that fundamentally the same car. But, you know, in terms of brand, you'd rather have a Lamborghini than a Porsche.
It's still, well,
would you?
It's still, that Porsche would still not drive out a Lamborghini. It will be fantastic and probably slightly dynamically better, but it won't have that inner sort of
Lamborghini
passion.
Flair.
Yeah, the passion and the flair.
Yeah, the only Porsches that really have character, real character, are the GT cars. So... That Urus has got some character, a little bit like an SVR Sport. They've got and a G Wagon. They've got something about them. But if you had to pick out the three, the best one is the Urus for every scenario.
So I'm assuming, Andrew, you might say the same thing. What would you swap the Urus for?
Okay, well. The other car that I've asked my family, it's been the best car I've ever had, has been a long wheelbase SV Range Rover.
Okay.
It actually, yeah. Taking the dynamic side out of it as a car, the luxury and the ambience in that car was amazing.
I experienced one for the first time at Goodwood Festival of Speed. They just let me want to go and pot over, and I was like, oh my God, how have I not realised that this is a thing
no
before?
One knows. No one knows about them.
So nice, and it just wafts along in complete opulence. Like, it's just so nice. And you say you get in the back and all the kit and everything moves and the pan roof. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you had to give up the dynamic capabilities, that would be your next go to.
And then soon change it for the new one, it's available.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to come then with a bit of a curveball. I would pick the Bentayga every day of the week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Good car.
I'd pick the new good Bentayga car. Every day. I've always loved the Bentayga. Even when it first came out, everyone was like, ew. I was like, yes. And I don't care if it's W12 or V8. Doesn't bother me at all. I think they're both wicked.
V8's better.
Yeah, well, the V8's lighter on its toes, isn't it? A bit better. Sounds fruitier. Like, they've always, I think, been a bit better, the V8s. But I don't really care. You could waft along, I guess, in the W12. And that's like all the details and the finish. For me, a Bentayga feels expensive. You know, inside or out, it always feels expensive. Where we've spoken about before, Cullinan gets let down by some of its buttons and its functionality. And for me, if I jump in a Range Rover, I'm always going to think, oh, that's from the F-Type. And that's the same from that XE that I borrowed for a week. So Bentayga just has a bit more of a feel to it for
and
me.
Do you not find the fitted into society a bit better now? When they first came out, I mean, I had one very briefly and I got lots of abuse in that car. Yeah. But now, with everything else that's going on, it just sits there on the school car park and no one even recognises them.
It's all about change, isn't it? It was just a new, it's a little bit like the stigma that's currently attached to the new M3. People will just forget about it and it'll just be an unbelievable car.
But M3 was just ugly. Well, Bentayga was like too showy. It was too in
ugly
your...
as well.
And ugly, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it was ugly? Oh, yeah. I always liked it.
But now it's got interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still a little bit ugly.
Yeah. Hey, I won't hear you talk about it this way. Okay, so those are favourites. Which SUVs do we think are overrated?
Overrated.
So cars, and we've probably spoken about this a bit before, Tony, but SUVs that people go nuts for that actually aren't very good, but for some reason people just keep buying or wanting.
Oh, I thought you were going to go underrated. I mean, I had one.
We're coming back to underrated, don't worry. We're working our way through this list.
Oh my God. I mean, have you got an overrated?
I've got two.
Oh.
Shall I go first?
By the way,
he's
planned this.
Yeah.
This is what he does to me every week.
Every week. Okay, yeah. Right. I'll kick things off and it'll help you, the creative juices flowing. First one, G-Wagon. Mercedes G63, I think, is overrated. I'm holding my own here.
He's deluded.
I'm holding my own because what frustrates me is the last version, utter crap. Right?
Terrible.
The new version came out and all the people that had bought the old one and put up with the crap for so long were like, oh my God, this one actually turns on. And they're like, it's amazing. It's so much better. It's still bad. It's still wallowy. It's still cumbersome. It's still a bit old school. And you're buying it to either have people think you're, oh, a Tiny Temper's the only popular culture reference I know. Or Kim Kardashian, or, you know.
I need to win it, isn't it?
Can he see over the
years? Have you watched that extension show like I have? Yeah. Now I realise who he is.
Property developer, Tiny Temper. I'm pretty sure he wasn't a property developer last time I heard of him. But you know, so that's a car that I think people are buying to post on Instagram or to turn up to a club in or a restaurant in, and not because it really offers anything else. I don't think it's comfortable. I understand why people buy it, but I think it's overrated.
Oh, I've got one then.
Go on.
Defender.
Oh, cut me to the heart.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's a fucking piece of shit. Don't work.
Well, that means
it doesn't work.
31 minutes, 40 seconds to bleep that out. Thanks for giving me the extra work.
The effing, take the effing out.
No, no, mate, you've done it now.
Okay. Defender.
Defender. No, but hold on a sec. Okay, so Defender in its on-road use, because off-road, that car is supposedly fantastic.
So is every other Range Rover.
Okay. Well, yes, but so what's overrated about it?
It's just not that good. The inside quality is nowhere near as good as a Sport or a Vogue. It's loads of money for what it is. And
agreed.
What they're fetching now.
That's crazy.
We were speaking about this earlier on, bearing in mind, we buy these sort of cars. they're just bonkers, mate. They're just through the roof. And for the exact same reason as of why you said the G-Wagon's overrated, it's an Instagram car, mate.
The Defender?
Yeah.
Do you think that's true?
I think it's a fashion statement.
Yeah.
Mm. I think people are buying them to, like the word Range Rover Sports and what have you. It's just, it's the latest fashion statement, but they're not realising. Is it FOMO, the fear of missing out?
Right? Yes.
Because
yeah.
Everyone thinks, oh, we can't get a Defender, can't get a Defender. I must buy one because everyone else has got one, which is fine at 50, 60,000. But then when you're getting up to £20,000 over list or 155, like the one we've just sold for a 5 litre supercharger.
155 grand.
Yeah. Unreal, isn't it? I was sort of fighting you because maybe I'm the cliche. No, I do still really want one, but I have to admit, yes, they are sort of flawed. I mean, you know, when I drove that one down to Cornwall, it's not very good. It's not very practical. The doors are too heavy to get in and out of. You've got to run and leap to get in it. You know, I mean, it's all of these things, but there's still a part of me that wants it for what it is. And yeah, it is a fashion statement.
The Sport is so much better as a car to drive.
And now the same money.
And yeah. The same money.
Come on.
At least the same
what
money.
What about a Discovery? If you think what a Discovery can do for £20,000 less than a Defender at current value.
For sure.
Okay, so if you're a farmer and you're buying the Boggo one with steelies, you know, base spec to use on a farm and it's just an off-road tool, do you not think that Defender will be very good and very capable?
Still too much money.
Still too much money, you think?
Yeah. Capable.
But very capable. Yeah. I think where they're going wrong are the people who are buying them like I would to schmooze around in London in with, you know, the 21-inch rims and the leather everywhere. Because at that point, 80 grand, you're right. There are so many better cars in terms of quality, capabilities, practicality, etc. So maybe you've got a point.
It's a utility family vehicle the Defender is supposed to be. If you take price into consideration, which you have to when you're buying these cars, I know we think about price a lot because it's our job to, but actually he's bang on. But the Discovery's a better car. The Discovery, it drives better, it's better finished inside, it's just as practical. Off-road capabilities will be the same because it's still a Land Rover. I mean why isn't everyone going mad on Discoveries?
Fair enough. Okay.
Well, number plate.
Yeah.
No, it's because of the number plate. Because of the back plate, number plate.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I'll let you have it. It pains me to agree with you, but I do agree with you. Andrew, do you have an overrated car?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I couldn't disagree more on the G63 because if I hadn't have said long wheelbase for my favourite, that new car's got such personality.
Great car.
Do you know, it's endearing as a car.
You roll it through a corner over 30.
Not the new one.
See, you're like, oh, no, it's so much better. It's still a bit poo, though.
No,
it's not.
It's got a personality. I'm surprised at you, actually, because
I like cars.
If you sat here every week, you wouldn't be surprised.
I do like cars.
That's because Merck haven't given him one.
Something in there.
Well, do you know what I would say is overrated, and it's not an SUV, but it's bought by the same people. Is an RS6?
Oh wow! Oh, you're going to upset a lot of people. Oh,
I know that's very controversial, but you know, a large car with a big boot, and everyone says they're fantastic, but they're so boring to drive. They're just fast. But nothing else.
You should stick to SUVs, boy. I mean, you've absolutely dropped a bomb there.
No, but the thing is,
No.
There'll be a lot of people coming for blood now, but I'm not going to wholly disagree with you because I've never been a big RS6 fan, and I'm not a fan of the old generation. People know that, but I never know the name C, whatever. So the last one I was never really a big fan
C7?
Of. C7? Sure, let's go with that.
I think so. Yeah, I think the new one's a C8.
I still haven't driven the new one, so I shouldn't wade in here.
Great car.
But to me, it's a bit of a obvious choice, but maybe in the same realm that I'm coming at you, Andrew, being like, oh, well, you know, why is everyone going for them? They're pointless, these super hyper SUVs. Maybe that's the same thing for that. That's just, it's an estate car, so it's more dynamic. It's better for that driver, you know, the driver-focused family man. Surely RS6 is better than what, the RSQ8?
Yeah, I just think people go on about it so much because it is actually a decent car, but people go on about it so much as it's the car to have. But dynamically, it's not that good. I would have an RSQ8 over that. 100%.
I think I would too.
See, I'm not sure I would. If it actually come to it and I was writing a check, I probably would have the RS6 over an RSQ8. If I'm honest, I probably would just because it's less money for sure. The only thing I will pick up on an RS6, which I don't necessarily agree with, is that they are a lot of money, mate. As in a lot of money. A four-sprung car list is 115.
Mm.
You know, that is a few quid for an estate car. Mm. And when we go back to it, we talk about it fairly often. When you look at an M5, okay, I know it hasn't got a big boot, but there's 70 grand.
Yeah.
And it's just as good to drive. And actually, it's better to drive than an RS6 as a machine.
You haven't got the tailgate. You can four-wheel drive off.
Yeah.
Can't you?
You haven't got the tailgate for the dog. I haven't got the tailgate.
Correct.
For the dog.
But you know, if you compare it to an E63 wagon, I'd have the RS6 all day because that E63 is crashy. The infotainment system's fussy.
When you say crashy, just clarify that for a second because I think I know what you mean.
It's too bumpy.
Yeah, it doesn't crash regularly.
It doesn't sit on the road properly.
I knew what you meant to say, but it just always crashes whenever you get in it. Well, we veered off slightly, but I get where you're coming from because I think if you're talking about the SUV market, especially the super SUV market, you kind of have to address RS6, E63. Has anyone experienced this while we go on this tangent? The A6 all-road, the Vore, yeah. Like the big Vore spring.
Previous generation.
So yeah, but there's a new one as well. There's a new one which has got the same looks as the... I just always see them, I'm like, what a cool-looking thing, but I guess they don't get very powerful engines.
Oh, it's so boring.
Will it be boring?
Oh.
Will it be... okay. It'd
be like Munich.
I nearly sent you a link saying, mate, can you get me one of these?
Oh, I wouldn't have replied. I'd left you on blue tick.
I wish I had a blue tick, mate. So, okay, well, let's come back to it. Tony, you mentioned you want to do underrated. I've got more topics to come, but more categories to come, but underrated, you were foaming at the mouth to do an underrated car.
And the end reason why I thought about this, I've got this one of these coming in to stop.
How convenient. So, Andrew, welcome to the regular format of the podcast. All the cars we talk about are cars that Tony's got to stop.
carsales.com.
Yeah, literally.
Org. The Alfa Stelvio.
Oh, hello. Quadrifoglio or just standard?
The Quadrifoglio, the leery one.
But I think underrated because no one bought them.
What a car.
Well,
I haven't driven one. Is it good?
Oh, mate, it's very good. It's a Giulia Quadrifoglio on stilts.
Jacked up.
And we know how good the Giulia Quadrifoglio. I mean, we're big fans. Hopefully you agree on that.
Yeah, I agree.
100%. We're huge. Actually, you have a very nice one in stock at the moment, a Giulia Quadrifoglio.
Oh, yes.
I've seen it on the website. Yeah, no, I just, you know.
You always sell them as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Every time we get one, I mean, they
fly out the door.
They're just good. Yeah.
So Stelvio Quadrifoglio, you never see them on the roads.
No.
But it's the same thing as Giulia Quadrifoglio. You say, oh, you know, they're underrated. And we hark on about this week in, week out. I think Stelvios, I get a lot of messages online, people saying, get a Stelvio Quadrifoglio, it's perfect. But no one buys them. And I don't think I would buy one.
Well, I hope someone buys my one.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. I don't think they look as good. I don't think they look that good. I think they look too short and stubby, personally.
The wheels don't fill the arches, do they?
Yeah. Like
all Italian cars are like that. Look, apart from the Urus, but look at Huracans, look at Ferraris. They never fill the arches. All Italian cars are the same. They've always got that great big gap.
Maybe.
Whereas German cars, they just sit nicer in general.
And you've always got that issue, which is when you're at that level, when you're spending that kind of money on an SUV, which has got to tick all these boxes, infotainment and tech is such a pivotal and important part. It's why I went in on the DBX so much, because they're like, you're right at the top end of this market.
Terrible
and for
car.
Me, the
Don't
infotainment
get me
system.
On that.
Yeah,
oh,
just,
mate.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Sounds
Have
fun.
You got one of them in stock? Have you got one?
I shouldn't be saying that. But yes.
No. It's fine because I slag my own cars off all the time. I've got in stock going on them all the time.
It's each to their own, isn't it? But I think. Stelvio, unfortunately, is let down by its tech and its infotainment. You know, it's not up there in that class, that price class. So again, when you start looking at it, you're going to go, well, maybe I'll go German or something else because, I just don't think it can live up there. So I get where you're coming from, but I think with reason, it gets overlooked.
Mm.
Well, mainly because of the terrible infotainment system inside, you know.
As we just said.
Yeah. Everything German just works, doesn't it?
Mm.
So,
Andrew, underrated?
Well, do you know what? Bentayga.
Oh,
Bentayga is an underrated car.
I agree.
It's been one of the few that's never gone silly over list. You know, not normally when a manufacturer brings out a new SUV because
it was £250,000 new anyway. It was a load of money.
But now, under 200 grand, which is what they are, everything's 200, you know.
You can get first gens under 100 grand. I look.
What, an Alexander's Prestige?
Yeah, hello.
You know, isn't it amazing as well now, Bentley in general? I know we're riding a really stupid wave at the moment in terms of used car prices, but Bentleys in general, 2 years ago, would instantly lose 100 grand in value, wouldn't they? And now, I mean, that Continental as well.
Continental GTs.
It's unbelievable car. But it's a lot of money.
This episode wasn't... The plan of this episode was not to highlight all of Alexander's stock. But again, because I looked at your website last night just to see if there's things we could talk about. That you've got a purple Continental GT.
Well, we had it already?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, fine. There you go. But you're right. Continental GTs, because that is a car that I lust. It's not a YouTube car tour, and it's a car that I would just have and not tell anyone about because it's just the best. And they just don't come down. Even the last generation, they're still up at 80, 90 grand.
Well, the what you're alluding to, they do come down to start with.
Sorry,
and
okay, sure.
And then they're leveled.
Yeah.
Apart from at the moment.
Apart from at the moment. But that normally, in general, they'll lose like 80 grand in the first 2 years, mm-hmm. and then they level off.
Yeah.
But this generation hasn't, but that's because of the stupid bonkers times we're in at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough.
Otherwise, they've done the same.
Yeah. Okay, so Bentayga, I'm with you. I'll come real left field then. Maserati Levante.
I've got one of them.
Guys, I'm just here to help you both out, okay? I'm just here to sell your stock for you. I'll be sending commission invoices next week.
Interesting.
So, yeah. But I would have to say the spicy Levantes, so what have you got in?
I've got it's actually really rare. It's the 3 litre S petrol.
Is that a V6? The V6? Yes. Okay, fine. So the V6 or the very rare V8 one.
Yeah.
The Trofeo,
which, I mean, there again, you don't see them, but... Actually, what a looker of a car, I think. Mad presence. Looks way more expensive than it is. You know, nice to drive.
Have you seen the price of a Trofeo before you say that?
No, what's the price?
Levante, yes, but not Trofeo.
Oh, why? What are they?
Start at £125,000.
Okay. Maybe leave that one on the side.
twice as much as the diesel and petrol.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so it's stupid. Is it the 488 engine or the Cali T engine or something like that, right?
In
the I think it's the Cali T engine.
It's a V8.
Okay, so the V6 one, because it does a lot. Again, a car that's let down by its infotainment, because it must be the Chrysler, I guess, American infotainment system. But really, really nice bits of kit. Good to drive, lovely to look at. You park on your driveway, someone's going, oh, you don't know, I've got a Maserati. Yeah.
They've got status as well, a bit like a Range Rover. Like, if you've got a Maserati, it's almost like you don't need to ask anything else.
Yeah, all right, well done. Yeah, you're doing all right, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay, fair. So I'm glad that we all found cars that we agreed on there.
46990, my car.
Link below.
I like it.
As every week, link below. Oh, someone's calling me. Maybe that's the estate agent. Oh, that could be the man changing my tyre. Hold on a second.
Can I tell you, so Sam keeps getting punches on his cars, right? And I know why. He says he can't work it out because they're run flats. Have you noticed that? Run flat BMW tyres, they always get nails in them. Have you noticed that?
Are we going somewhere with this?
No. I'm just asking you a question because Sam's over there.
Well, you think you'd get a nail in the tyre whether it was run flat or not, though?
No, but in general, I think, and I've noticed over the years as well, that BMW run flat tyres just pick up nails.
Well,
really?
Yes.
Horrifically so. So I've got to go downstairs right now to sort out Quick Fit. Whilst I'm doing that, I want to think best SUV sub 75 grand. Bit of consumer advice.
So are we pausing or are we going to talk? Right. Best SUV, what do you say?
Sub 75.
Oh, Range Rover Sport, man. Yeah?
That's a good car. Sub 75. Oh, I'm going to think about that. Now, new or used, though? There's a thing. To buy today or...
But I would say in the used market today. I mean, there's a few, but if I had 75 grand to go and buy a car today, and it was a used car, I don't know why, because they don't work. But I'd always say Range Rover Sport. Yeah. Me.
They are a good car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Q7?
Good car. Practical, but they're not interesting to drive, are they?
What about the GL? Is it the GLE? Yeah, same thing, isn't it? They're all the same, aren't they? I mean, your world's your oyster, really, but I would always just say that the Range Rover is, I don't know. They're like 90 grand nearly new, a 3 litre diesel Range Rover, especially an autobiography one.
Yeah.
You can pick one on the used market for 55, 60 grand, 2-year-old one.
It's the 911s, isn't it, of SUVs. A Range Rover Sport ticks many, many boxes, doesn't it?
What I would say, yeah.
Any particular engine?
The 3 litre diesel for me.
3 litre diesel.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great engine. Yeah.
I like the SDV8. Oi, oi.
Yeah, no one buys that.
No, but I would, because it sounds fruity as hell.
Well, they're no more money than a 3 litre, are they? Which is
not
always,
on the used
always,
market.
Yeah, it always amazes me.
I'm assuming you just said it's kind of like the easy go-to car, right? Ticks all the boxes, is sort of semi-classless, does everything. Does everything. Yeah. Do you not think it's a tiny bit boring, though, because of that?
The whole lot, that whole market, mate, we just said Q7 and GLE as well. I mean, they're all boring. I mean,
but you can get some freedom. So let's look at Macan for a second, because that's kind of where I would. It's the most obvious and boring choice, I think, because everyone goes for it. I actually have struggled with Macans over the years because I think it's a bit like, duh. But a GTS Macan, that's a fruity bit of kit.
Car.
Yeah. It's got to be there, yeah. It's not as practical as the Sport, though.
Really? What, less boot space?
It's not as big, is it?
That's why I wouldn't have one. They're a small car.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're not a big car, are they? If you've got a family, I think it's fine as a second car.
Hoards its money well, though.
They do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
so that's the other thing, you know. I think in this space, you know, you can get some overpriced stuff. You know, my M40i, I think, new, it was like a nearly over a 60 grand car, something like that. You know, that's expensive when it comes out. If you're buying that from factory, that's a lot of money. And okay, fine, if you're buying them used, great value, as they will soon be, or maybe one will be available via Gravelwood or Alexander's. Let's see
whoever gives the most money.
We've got a bidding war at the end of this. But so the value's got to come into it. So a few of those other cars that I think, you know, represent, so yeah, Macan GTS, something that I, what was the car that I was looking at the other day that I saw that I thought was a great steal? Oh no, Audi RSQ3. Not a great steal because a lot of money, but I really like that.
Yeah, that's not a good car for some.
Oh, really? Is it not a good?
I don't think so.
Both of you.
No. I honestly think driving capability wise, if I'm going to say a Sport, and if you want something more reliable than a Sport, I'd have an X5.
Oh, well, you're in an X5 today, aren't you?
I mean, what a car that is. The car that I've got has got an air suspension, so it's the same similar setup to a Sport, which is why Sports always drive nice, Range Rover Sport.
Nice and floaty.
Air suspension, But an X5 of air suspension, flipping hell, it's easy as good, and it won't go wrong.
That latest model is very good, isn't
very
it?
Good
very
car.
Good car. Drives. Great value for money now.
They look fantastic.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Okay, so did I interrupt? Was there, Andrew, did you pick a... best car sub 75, or it was
I,
a general.
I agree with Tony on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, final category then. What would you replace my X3 M40i with? Let me give you the criteria. Okay. So, I'm at 450 a month, I think, monthly payments. I could increase that. So, let's say we're talking about the, I guess, what, 55 to 70 grand bracket, let's say, I think, for cars to buy. It's got to be practical and usable, so SUV for sure. Not too big. I don't want a huge, massive Cayenne thing. Like, you know, good size, because I can park it in London. Sound good and fast, but doesn't need to be outrageous, you know. So, but it's got to sound good and fast. Great tech, need tech, because the BMW infotainment, unbelievable. And what
you
else do I need?
Want to be at 450 a month?
No, I can increase from there.
Oh,
but I'm saying, but I'm talking about value. So my car, I think, represents insane value at that price point, right? Like, you can't get many other cars at 450 that do what that X3 does.
Nope.
So whatever you suggest needs to represent a similar kind of thing. It's basically an impossible thing to answer, but I'm intrigued to hear what you would both...
So I go?
Yes,
go
on.
Do you know what I think?
Oh God, here we go.
And it's a bit obvious because...
Euros.
Half a Euros.
Yeah.
Is it an F-Pace SVR?
Oh.
I said that to you yesterday.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is it isn't too big. It's
good size.
X4 size. It's got the 5-litre supercharger engine, which in anyone's money is one of the best engines ever made. Sounds amazing because it's got...
Fair.
That SVR tone, hasn't it?
Sure.
Infotainment,
it's there or thereabouts, you know.
It's not Italian, is it? When it's working, it's still fine. And I think actually not many people think about that car. It's a little bit under the radar, isn't it?
Do they hold their value relatively well?
Well, if you buy it as a used car, it will be under 60,000.
Yeah.
So, I think it's good news.
It's a good shout. You know, I don't know why I hadn't really thought. You did say that last night, but I thought you were talking about the new one.
I was.
Yeah, I know you were. Is that what you'd still go for?
No.
No, okay, go on. What would you?
X3M.
X3M, yes!
In terms of value, if you're happy with the car you've got. By the way, I don't think you should change. Okay. I think, but
like wrapping a red car red. I did that. I wrapped my old red F Type red. It was a slightly different shade.
He's not all there.
Do we need to come back to that?
No. We can leave that out.
We've done that bit. If the car that you're happy with the car that you've got for not a lot more money, You could just have the step-up version.
Gives it a bit more fruitiness.
Yeah.
A bit more shouty.
And it is a good car. It's an M car on stilts.
Yeah. Free, bad back.
Yeah. Well, I think Vicky will be a little bit upset, but if I just
but
told her...
it is crashy. It's not good, like I said.
Just stop saying crashy, mate. It's the wrong word. It's like brittle or...
It's
or
bumpy.
Bumpy,
it's
not crashy.
It's uncomfortable. It's not... An F-Type will drive down the road loads nicer than
I think you're
that.
Right.
It's a bit like that... GLC 63 as well, same thing, and it's really bumpy. And
they skip, have you noticed? The AMG, four-wheel drive AMG product, at low speeds, the skip.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Like a 911 does.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting, yeah, because you get that sort of a brutalness from the wheels, don't you?
It's the front diff that does that.
Ah, okay. Right, now, clearly Twiggy's bored because she's been coming to each of us trying to get on our laps. So to wrap things up, let's just come back to a very juicy topic. Why do we all hate the DBX?
Well... style over content, okay. Like any Aston Martin.
Yes.
And I think with the Urus, for example, or even a Bentayga, for example, they've got Porsche, Audi bits and pieces in them, and then they make them better.
Mm-hmm.
The DBX has got Mercedes parts in it, and they've just made it worse.
It's true, mate. It's absolutely bang on.
But the thing is, so I don't know why I'm going to try and save the DBX here, because I've been as rude about it as all of us have. Isn't that what all Astons do? Isn't that sort of almost the Aston charm, that you don't buy it for even necessarily the dynamic capabilities compared to its rivals, or the sort of in-car infotainment compared to its rivals, but the style, the looks, the feel, the way they make you feel can outweigh those flaws?
I think that's fine if you're not driving it every day. You know, if it's your Sunday car, you can put it, but your everyday car...
Mm.
You can't put up with things. And it is a good car. Actually, I will say it's a good car. But you've got to compare it to an SVR. But an SVR's at list is £100,000 cheaper.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's its problem. It's competing at £200,000 level, but it should be competing at £100,000 level. That's when it would work. As a used car, it'll be great.
Yes.
It's not a bad car.
It's not a bad, and it does what Aston does, where you're going to have something slightly different and unique on the driveway, and people are going to go, oh, I've got an Aston, and it's got that style. I don't love the design, but it's got something about when I see them on the road, I go, oh, yeah, that's DBX. Yeah. So I definitely notice them. It's just for me, yeah, as a new car, when you're pitching it against, you know, Bentaygas and stuff at that level, I would just always feel let down. But maybe if you're an old school Aston owner, or you're prepared to put up with those flaws, maybe you're going to end up very happy. But I just don't think it can. I don't think it's there. I don't think it can compete with some of its rivals.
I mean, we're in 2021, about to go into 2022. How can you spend £200,000 on a car and be prepared not to be happy? I mean, not good enough, mate.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, and I feel so sorry for Aston, because it was supposed to be their saviour, wasn't it?
I don't feel sorry for them at all.
I feel frustrated for them.
As many like Cayenne saved Porsche at the time and what have you, I really hoped it was going to save Aston Martin, but it's just not good enough.
But it's not good enough.
The new price.
Like you said as well, like they were given the chance to make a proper bit of kit. You know, it's got that Merc engine in it, you know, and like you said, they've made it worse.
Yeah.
It is
a letdown, unfortunately. But heck, if it drops like a brick ton and it's 75, 80 grand, maybe it's a cool car. I mean, I don't know if it's ever going to get
even
that
early
low.
Hundreds.
But
even, yeah, early hundreds, yeah, it's fine.
Fair. It's just a bit overpriced. But anyway, I wanted to get that out. So look, Andrew, thank you so much for driving all the way down here.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been great. I'm now going to go and search Auto Trader or look at both of your websites for some potential X3 replacements. but yeah, it's been fantastic. If you guys ever want to check out the stock that Alexander's have got in, head over to their lovely website. I'm sure I'll be back up with you not too long, making some more content. Of course, Tony also has things like a Levante in stock, which is an Estelvio that is key for people to buy. So you can go over to Gravelwood Car Sales. If you want to follow either of them, I'll put links to their social media pages below. If you want to follow me, I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media pages. And we'll be back with you next week for another episode. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.